You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K24. As always, it's myself, Mo Muncy, and BJ's away right now. He's on a plane, so you know we had to get a brother on the show right back. The finest GM in the biz. Detroit Pistons, if you're listening, I've got a suggestion. Mr. Scott Perry is with us. Scott, how you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing great, Mo. Doing great. How you doing? How things over in London?
Oh, it's a blessing. We had some rare sunshine today. Had a nice little day today. Awesome. Some awesome. Early tip-off NBA games. This is an early-ish night for me. It's 4 a.m. It's kind of an early finish. So
exactly.
So let's get this show on the road. The first game of the day was the OKC Thunder in Dallas. After tying the two games in Oklahoma one apiece, they went into Dallas and lost to the Mavericks 105-101 in a very interesting game. Because Dallas, of course, took home court advantage from the Thunder, and now they held a 2-1 lead in the series. And, Luka Doncic, it's hilarious. When we say Luka struggled, you then look at the stat sheet. He's got a 22-point triple-double. No, he only had 5 assists, but like 22 points, 15 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals. This is not a bad way to go. Kyrie Irving as well, 22 points. They both had very quiet first halves. PJ Washington was the standout scorer for the Dallas Mavericks with 27 points. He knocked down 5 of his threes. And they got 12 off the bench from Derek Lively. And Tim Hardaway Jr. gave them 8 points as well off the bench. Whereas for the OKC Thunder, another quiet game for Chet Holmgren. Only 13 points to go along with 8 boards. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had 31 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, and 5 blocks. And Chet had 4 blocks pretty early on in the game as well. Jalen Williams gave them 16. And Isaiah Joe gave them 13 off the bench. But they didn't get much aside from that. But Scott, I want to talk to you about PJ Washington, right? Because this is the second game in a row where he's really gone off. And you can tell that OKC's defensive scheme, what they're trying to do is throw multiple bodies at Kyrie and Luka. And they're helping from the corners, leaving guys like PJ Washington open to shoot those threes. At what point do you weigh up this will average out and he'll start missing some of them versus we need to change our scheme and actually start guarding the corners?
Great question, Mo. But PJ Washington is a winning, what I would term a winning basketball player.
Now that he's out of Charlotte.
Yeah, he's not when he's at Charlotte, but if you go back to his history in college.
Okay.
And he does a lot of the little things and defends. And so he landed in the perfect place for him in Dallas. Because look, he's got two of the best closers in the game on his team in Kyrie and Luka. So that takes pressure off of them. And anytime you're going to play against two great offensive players like that in your OKC, you got to play the odds and you got to try to do what you can to slow those two guys down. You can't let them go crazy. And you're going to say, okay, PJ Washington, Tim Hardaway, Derek Jones, Derek Lively. Let's see if you guys can step up and beat us. And so I think they're going to continue to play a similar style of game. Look, they were right there today, Oklahoma City. And to me, the difference in this game came down to one thing. Aside from them having the two great closers, because Kyrie was fantastic late in the fourth, and so was Luka in terms of making the clutch plays. And then OKC, you've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who is that closer for them. But the difference really got down to offensive rebounding. They got 9 extra opportunities, Dallas did. They out-rebounded OKC, I think, 15-6.
Yep. And it's been a problem for OKC all year, the rebounding numbers. They finished the game with 41 boards compared to 48 of Dallas's, but like you said, 15 of them were an offensive glass leading to 16 second-chance points.
And so you give a good offensive team like that that many second opportunities, because the rest of the numbers were pretty much even across the board, from three-point shooting, free throw
assists,
shooting,
steals. Although OKC had 11 blocks in the game. It's very rare you see 11 blocks and you don't win that, because it usually means your defense is locked in. But
what we're seeing, though, Mo, is what we've talked about a number of times throughout the year on the show when we evaluated the OKC Thunder. Love their team, love what they're about. But every team has a weakness. And they're just not physical on the interior. Their perimeter guys have some physicality, Dort and Jalen Williams and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But Chet Holmgren right now just is not able to play 48 minutes of physical basketball. His body won't allow him to do that. He competes. I love his competitive spirit, but he's just not physical. And Josh Giddey is not a physical player. So that's where they struggle right now. And somehow they got to figure out how they can lessen that gap in terms of offensive rebounding and being able to make those, start getting more of those 50-50 balls and limiting the offensive rebounding of the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah. They're a team that likes to play on the perimeter, whereas Dallas usually has always one guy, Lively or Gafford, on the inside. So that automatically gives you a boost on the offensive rebounding. I mentioned PJ Tucker. He was shooting 31% from the three during the regular season with Dallas, and that's jumped up to 41%. But another percentage I wanted to talk to you about here is Derek Lively, who shot 50% from the free throw line in the regular season. But tonight, he went 8 of 12 from the stripe. And OKC did something interesting. They went to the Hacker Lively. If you guys are unfamiliar, the Hacker Shaq term was from when teams would foul Shaquille O'Neal on purpose to make him shoot free throws, stop the clock so they can get the ball back and hope he misses one or both of them. What did you make of employing that strategy in a game where a lot of people thought it wasn't really necessary to do?
Well, I understand. Look, you've got a rookie center who struggled making free throws throughout the season. So now you're in a high-pressure playoff situation. So I understand the coach from OKC at least giving that a look. Now, let's see if that continues during the series. Lively passed that test pretty well today and stepping up and making those free throws. I'm personally have never been a huge fan of that, but I've seen it because I've seen it work sometimes, but I've also seen it backfire. And today was one of those times that I would say it backfired a little because the guy was stepped up and made free throws, and you don't want to intentionally give away points, especially in the playoff games if you can help it.
And when you were with the Pistons going up against Shaquille O'Neal and the Lakers, was that something you guys talked about a lot, the Hacker Shaq strategy?
Didn't talk about it a ton. We had Ben Wallace, who had so much pride.
Yep.
And even though he was giving up 6-7 inches
to Shaq, in height,
maybe,
yep.
5 seconds, and another 70 pounds, maybe.
Yep.
But we prided ourselves defensively, just playing defense the right way. Now, there may have been a play here or there that you're going to foul him and not let him get a, if he was getting into a real rhythm in terms of scoring, that you may foul him and make him go to the line and make two, but that might occur earlier in the game, not necessarily toward the end of the game. That Pistons team just really prided itself on playing offense and defense the right way and not giving away any points. And we're very stingy defensively and never really resulted into that. Now, we had teams do that to our team on a couple of occasions because Ben Wallace was a poor free throw shooter, as a lot of people may know. And a lot of times that ended up backfiring against those teams.
Yeah, well, in your finals against Shaq, he shot, I think, 11 free throws a game, which was the lowest out of any of his trips to the finals with the Lakers. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if they continue that as the series progresses, because of course we know game four is the crucial game in the series because Dallas will have the chance to go up 3-1 or it'll be a tied series after that. So we're going to keep a close eye on that as we move forward. If you're OKC, what can you possibly do with this roster to try and address, because, you know, all season long I've been saying that Chet should be a four and they should have a five next to him. We know a friend of the show, Bismack Biyombo, signed to that roster, but it doesn't look like he's going to be getting many playoff minutes. But what can they do to address this rebounding issue?
Well, you brought the name up because I looked at it today and I looked at the box score and said, why not try Bismack Biyombo for 8 or 10 minutes just to see?
Mm-hmm. I'd rather him take those 13 minutes from Josh Giddey.
Yeah, if his physical presence at both ends of the floor can make a difference, can he get them some extra possessions on the offensive glass,
mm-hmm.
as well as limiting Dallas's ability to get offensive rebounds? So I wouldn't be surprised. And this is what the playoffs is about, is adjustments. So if I'm Coach Mark Daigneault, I've got to look at that, understand that is an Achilles heel for us right now. He's the most seasoned physical presence this on their bench right now. So why not try him? So let's see if they do that. That would be something that if I were coaching the team, I would at least feel like I would have to explore it.
I once watched Bismack Biyombo get 26 rebounds in a game against the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA playoffs when he was on the Toronto Raptors. And that was a great run that he had in that Toronto uniform. But we'll see, because I think that's interesting. I think OKC, they like to play the five-out offense. They like having five guys that can shoot well, aside from Josh Giddey. But even he kind of spaces the floor on the perimeter, and he will try and do what he can do. But his minutes still continues to confuse me. He was better tonight than he has been in the first two games of this series. But the other game of today was the Boston Celtics in Cleveland against the Cleveland Cavaliers, getting back to winning ways and taking a 2-1 series lead as Boston got the 106-93 win. And a lot of people had a lot of things to say about Jason Tatum, who responded with 33 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal, and a block to lead his team to the win. And Jaylen Brown also chipped in with 28 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. Drew Holiday had a great stretch of this game. He finished with 18 points. Derek White gave him 12. And, you know, the Derek White thing, Scott, this is just why I wanted to ask about PJ Washington before, because Derek White was shooting the lights out in the first round and you know, to start this series. But he regressed to the mean very quickly, because no one can stay on fire forever. If you're a 40% three-point shooter and you're shooting 70% for a bunch of games, it's only natural you're going to regress pretty quickly. Tonight, he went 3 of 8 from behind the arc, which is decent, but it wasn't quite the form we've seen from him. But it's good to see the ball go through the net for him. And over for the Cleveland Cavaliers, Donovan Mitchell had 33 points on 22 shots. And Darius Garland had 15. He got a little bit going at the end. Caris LeVert came off the bench with 15. And Evan Mobley, another big game from him. He had 17 and 8 in the game. Is it just a Cleveland thing to have one superstar player and not much help? Because that's what they did with LeBron, with the exception of a couple years. And now this is what they're doing with Donovan Mitchell. Because I watched this team and like the stretches of the game where Donovan Mitchell wasn't on the court, it would just fall apart.
Yeah, it's been tough sledding without Donovan on the court the entire playoff run for Cleveland. But you got to remember, though, when they signed Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland had been an all-star already. Mm-hmm. He had been one-time all-star. And yes, and people tend to forget that. Now, as you watch this series, Boston appears to be targeting him on the defensive end because of his lack of size. And I think in doing that, that has impacted Garland on the offensive end, because they're not getting the consistent output that they need from him, to really compete and challenge this team on a consistent basis. He's going to have to play bigger and shoot the ball and score at a higher clip for Cleveland to have any opportunity, in my opinion, to win another game in this series. So that I'll be watching that very closely. Evan Mobley, who you mentioned, we're starting to see some growth from this young man. Mm-hmm. Last couple of playoff games, he's starting to become a little more assertive. I still would like to see him be more than what he's been. And some of that's going to be once he's able to get stronger too, because he's not always able to take advantage when teams switch onto him with smaller people, mm-hmm. because he hasn't developed a strong enough lower base, in my opinion, to really start backing smaller defenders down. He can use his length, but I'd like to, you know, as he gets older and stronger, I think he could develop into a really nice second or third option for that Cleveland Cavaliers team.
Absolutely. His post-up game does need a lot of work. I mean, I would even look to experiment with Drew Holiday guarding him for stretches and just seeing if we can kind of tempt Cleveland into going to some post-ups because they think it's a mismatch. A player I wanted to talk about in this one, though. Well, first of all, I wanted to give a shout-out to Peyton Pritchard, because there was a stretch in this game where the Cavs had cut a 23-point lead down to single digits. Yeah. And the Celtics kind of look disorientated in as they do down the stretch in games. And Peyton Pritchard, who at the time was 0 from 1 from behind the arc, he'd only hit one shot in the game, he decided to pull up for a 3 from the logo. Just absolute pure confidence on the court with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and everyone there. but I wanted to talk about Al Horford, because that's the player that the Cleveland Cavaliers are targeting. And tonight was really the first time I've watched Horford in a playoff game. And I'm like, wow, he's really showing his age, because they're essentially trying to get whoever Horford's guarding set screen, and then Donovan Mitchell will hit a step back over him because he knows that Horford hasn't got the speed to close out to him anymore. What's the counters for this? Is this just something you're going to live with and you're going to say, if we can slow the other guys down, we're going to live with with Donovan Mitchell doing what he does? Or, like, I personally think that they should give Xavier Tillman a few more minutes. He didn't play tonight, but mm-hmm. he just has a little bit more burst than Al Horford at this stage. But then again, he doesn't shoot the threes like Al Horford does, even though he went 0 from 6 from behind the arc tonight. But, you know, with Al Horford, clearly not the prime Al Horford we once knew, or the Al Horford from a few years ago who was giving Giannis the work. What can the Celtics do to avoid them being picked on defensively like this?
Well, you brought up a name, and they brought him to the team this year, Xavier Tillman. And he has some playoff experience when he was in Memphis. I'd look to play him a little more. You can't. I don't think that Al Horford can keep playing 39, 40 minutes every other night in the playoffs, given his age. Love his approach. Love his professionalism and his understanding. But to your point, I don't think he can be as effective playing that heavy amount of minutes. And they're going to need him beyond this series. So you don't want to just totally wear him down in this series when you still have, in Boston's case, hopefully a conference final and an NBA finals ahead of you. And you don't know when Kristaps Porzingis is going to come back. This is why, Mo, I would say all of we've been saying a lot on this show, the importance of bench play. Mm-hmm. We so often focus on star players in this league and who's going to be the star in the playoff series. And rightfully so. Those guys get them to this point. They're expected to play big in big moments, but they can't do it themselves. Mm-hmm. And if the Celtics don't find someone, I know they tried Luke Kornet a little bit, but Cleveland is playing smaller, so Luke is going to struggle playing away from the basket and switching when Cleveland goes small. Tillman is a smaller center at 6'8". I definitely, if I'm them, I'd look to find a way to play him a little bit more to help Al Horford out in terms of his minutes.
Absolutely, and it's not all about the superstars, it's about the bench players. But what I like to notice is what the superstars do that's not scoring related. Because everyone's been criticizing Jason Tatum throughout this playoff run for his lack of scoring to the usual standard we hold him to. But when you watch him play, the first thing that stands out to me is his rebounding, which has been absolutely huge. He had 13 boards tonight. So far in the playoffs, he's 6th out of all players in the playoffs in terms of total rebounds collected. Josh Hart, of course, is number one with 120 so far. But we'll get onto the Knicks later. But it's not even just the rebounds that come on the stat sheet. The amount of times tonight, if you go back and watch the game again, that he just kind of tips the miss from the Cavaliers to a teammate who then gets the rebound, and then the Celtics get out in transition. And that's like how Jaylen Brown picked up 9 rebounds. Half of them, Tatum tipped the ball to him, and he was able to get out in transition. The rebounding efforts he had, but also defensively. On ball, he's a fantastic on-ball defender. And we talk about all these guys in the MVP conversation, and a lot of them, you don't really trust them to get you stops. But Tatum, on the ball and off the ball as the weak side help defender, has been absolutely fantastic in this. And now, he is comfortable guarding the 5 in Evan Mobley. Because what the Celtics have done here mm-hmm. is they've switched Horford onto Isaac Okoro rather than onto Evan Mobley, because Mobley can face up and use a little bit of his speed to try and get going as well. So they put him on Isaac Okoro, who's not known as being a great shooter, and they've given Tatum the task of guarding Mobley on a lot of possessions, and he's held up pretty well. So I just think, you know, in terms of watching the game and talking about these star players, 33 points is very nice, but I'm looking at the rebounds, the defense, and the passing. He finished with 6 assists and a bunch of hockey assists too. So it's not always, you know, the headline scoring.
Great point, Mo. And look, what we're witnessing with Jason Tatum is an evolution of a star, a young star player. He came in this league as someone who could really score the basketball, wasn't a top-level defender at that point, wasn't even a top-level rebounder, had all the tools to do those things. And what he has realized through all of his various deep runs in the playoffs, that nothing else matters now for him, his team, and his legacy other than winning the basketball game. So he knows that he to be a great player and a star and become one of the faces of the league, it's doing any and everything you can on the court to ensure a victory. And that's where he's at now. For him to get 13 rebounds tonight, whether it's making the right assist, like you said, he's gotten a lot stronger now where he can switch on to bigger players and hold his position on the interior. There's probably no player in this league remaining in the playoffs that has more scrutiny and pressure to deliver a title than Jason Tatum. I think he understands that. So we're not only you're not only seeing this guy evolve physically and his skill set evolve, you're seeing him evolve mentally and understanding that, look, if I'm going to be the guy here for the Celtics team, I've got to do a little bit of everything to make sure we win. And so I've got a great deal of respect for him in making this transformation. And it's going to be key if they're going to hoist the title, the trophy at the end of the season. He's got to play both ends. And he's got to get 50-50 balls. He's got to rebound. He's got to do whatever it takes on a given night because they have enough other guys that can help shoulder some of the scoring load for him.
Absolutely. And we've got a caller joining us live on the show right now. I don't know if this is going to mess up the recording, but one Mr. BJ Armstrong must have landed from his private jet and he joins us back on the show right now. It's good to have the band back together, just waiting for him to connect as we speak, and then we'll preview tonight's game. So what perfect timing. Awesome. What perfect timing.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed the Celtics performance. I did get kind of worried because they did have such a big lead, and in typical Celtics fashion, you saw it start to slip away a little bit.
You know, that is the one troubling trend that we've seen with the Celtics throughout the regular season, even though they had a great regular season, won a lot of games. Because they shoot so many three-point shots and they get caught when teams start to make a little run at them, you see them start to play a little more one-on-one basketball and the ball sticks and it doesn't move. And it allows teams to make some sustained runs against them and close the gap. So that's going to, moving forward, to me, that's a little concerning, the better teams that they're going to play and whoever they may ultimately face, whether it be in the Eastern Conference Finals or if they're fortunate enough to go to the finals, that can be very costly to them. They got to figure out a way to be more consistent on moving the basketball and not so reliant upon a lot of the one-on-one abilities of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Drew Holiday and Derek White, all those guys.
Yeah.
When they move the ball, they're tough. They're tough to defend.
Yeah, well, I like Drew Holiday because he likes to go and attack inside. But BJ is back with us. BJ, how you doing, my brother?
Hey, gentlemen. Fresh off the plane. I'm just listening. I'm just catching fresh, the knowledge.
Fresh off the plane. Safe journey. You all good?
Yeah, I'm just catching the knowledge. You know, just catching the knowledge. That's all.
It's got to be done. Well, you join us in perfect time, BJ, because we're about to preview tonight's matchup. So I'm going to let you jump straight in, Mr. Armstrong, with the Knicks and the Pacers. What are you looking for in this matchup tonight?
You know, guys, I just can't believe the minutes that the Knicks are just putting on every single game. 40 minutes. And they just seem, their bodies just seem to be, you know, I don't know how they're going to be able to take it. So even though I love the Knicks style of play, I'm just going to say at some point, you know, the accumulation of minutes are going to catch up with them at some point. So I'm going to say the longer this series goes on, it's probably going to favor the Pacers. Big shot by that kid, Nemhart.
Yep, Andrew Nemhart. Huge shot.
Big shot by him. So I'm going to say the Pacers, and then let's go back to New York in Game 5.
All tied up.
So I'm gonna pick the Pacers.
Well, Scott, obviously you have a great insight into this Knicks team, and I'd love to get your thoughts on not just the series so far, but also your predictions for Game Number 4.
I think it's definitely a must win for the Pacers, because they don't want to go back to New York down 3-1. I agree, BJ. I mean, I'm marveling the amount of minutes that Josh Hart has played. Josh Hart has played every minute of this series thus far, right?
I think so. Did he take a rest in the previous game?
I know for the entire playoffs going into last game, he was averaging 46.6 minutes a game in the playoffs.
Yeah. He played 43 in game three in Indiana. And you could see he didn't even want to come out, though. He was mad that he got taken out of the game.
Yeah. And for a player whose game relies so much on hustle and energy, when you start playing every other game like they're doing, and the game tomorrow is in the afternoon.
Yeah, every other day.
3:30. Every other day. And the game is at 3:30, so it's not even a night game, so you have less than 48 hours. DiVincenzo probably played close to 48 minutes as well in that game. It's going to really be interesting to see. And he shot lights out. Can he continue to shoot that way? The Knicks shot the three ball fantastic, in particular DiVincenzo.
Of 11 in the last game.
Yes. My concern for the Pacers, and it's been existing in all three games thus far, when it gets close and tight, those 50-50 balls, being able to keep the Knicks off the offensive glass, even without Mitchell Robinson. You know, Hartenstein, Precious Achiuwa, obviously Josh Hart. That for the Pacers to win tomorrow, they're gonna have to do a much better job, in my opinion, on the glass. And secondly, they're going to also need Obi Toppin and T.J. McConnell. So they have an edge off the bench, the Pacers do, in terms of productivity, and they're going to play those guys for more minutes. They need big games because in game three, neither one of those guys had really big offensive outputs like they did in games one and two in New York.
Who you got winning game number four?
Ooh, it's a tough one, but I'm going to go with the Pacers. They gained a little confidence getting over the hump, getting that first win. The urgency from that team, I think, will be there. And they know if they want to stay in this series, they've got to win that game tomorrow afternoon. So I'm going to favor the home team ever so slightly.
Yeah, it's interesting because they play so many minutes. You could tell definitely late in the fourth quarter it starts to affect the guys because, you know, New York control the boards, but in the fourth quarter they got out-rebounded, especially on the offensive glass, by the Pacers.
Yeah, and New York got beat at their own game late in that game. Right.
They did indeed.
They got beat at their own game.
I do want to see, I think, for the Pacers, Tyrese Haliburton to be more aggressive in the fourth quarter of these games. If you're going to be the superstar of this franchise, you've got to be more assertive. You can't rely on Andrew Nembhard, who, what was he, like 1 from 7 from three, and then he's taking that shot. I don't know what everyone was thinking when that was in the air, but you know, that was a great time to play. Yeah, I think for this one, the Pacers have got to just try and run them off the floor because, as BJ said, as the series gets longer, it's only going to play into your advantage and play into your hands a little more. And, you know, the Knicks are now without OG for game four, and I don't know if he's going to be around for game 5, 6, and 7. No. Hamstring injuries are pretty tough. So without OG, this is your chance really to capitalize now. I know Mitchell
Robinson. What's his status?
He's unavailable for game number four.
He's unavailable for game four. And they're staying very tight-lipped with it, but I agree with Mo. When you're talking about a hamstring injury in the midst of a playoff series, I would be mildly surprised if he returns during this series.
Well, he did travel with the team to Indiana for game three and four.
They're going to travel because he can get a lot of treatment with the entire medical staff.
But yeah, so I was going to say a lot of fans thought he might be around for game four because he was in Indiana. But no, I think, you know, a hamstring like that, especially for a player like OG, my favorite part about OG's game is you ever notice when he shoots a three or any jump shot, he like bounces on the spot for like, he takes three extra jumps on the spot after he shoots the ball. It's like a follow through kind of rhythm thing. But yeah, I think the Indiana Pacers have a great chance to capitalize on this, being at home as well and tie the series, and that shifts the dynamic entirely. But speaking of how important game fours are, tonight's game between the Denver Nuggets and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Ooh. is the most I've anticipated a game in the playoffs thus far in this year's playoffs. Because if the Timberwolves take a 3-1 lead with a win, this is, defending champions are in serious trouble. But if the Denver Nuggets get the win, then all of a sudden Minnesota have dropped two games at home. And if Denver Nuggets get a win, you know, Nikola Jokic said in an interview, what's the key? I think he said it on SportsCenter, the show that Scott does quite a lot. He said on SportsCenter, they said, what's the key to winning against Timberwolves? He said, crossing the halfway line in under 3 seconds. And if they can find a way to alleviate that pressure and play their style of Denver Nuggets basketball rather than being hounded by the Timberwolves, we could very well see a tied series here. But BJ, who have you got in game four tonight?
I'm going with Denver. I'm going with Denver. I you know, it's going to take a monumental effort to beat them. And certainly Minnesota has shown that they have the capability to do it. But I'm thinking if they're going to win this, they're going to, you know, they're going to have to win it and go back there and win another game in Denver. So I think this is an opportunity to figure out who they are, talking about Minnesota. But I'm going to go with the champs in game four. I'm going to go with them, tie this up, and then let's see what's going to happen here in the three-game series.
What about you, Scott? Who are you picking for this one?
I'm going to have to go counter to my buddy BJ here on this one. The Timberwolves, this is a statement game for them. They to solidify what they accomplished in Denver, winning those two games on the road, they must win this game four at home, in my opinion, if they're going to win this series. Anthony Edwards, I love what he said at the end of the game, how he took responsibility for the loss.
This is what I was going to say. I'm anticipating Anthony Edwards' best performance we've ever seen from him. Because what he said after the game that Scott just said, he said, it's on me. I'll take the blame for this loss. I came out with no energy at all. I can't afford to do that for my team. I let my team down, the coaches and the fans. And for a young player to have that level of maturity and not blame the referees like Rick Carlisle or just anyone else in general, and, you know, really just take responsibility for the loss, I think that's fantastic. It shows leadership. It shows a great mindset. And I know that he's going to be raring to go for game four tonight. So I'm with Scott on this one. I think, you know, having Rudy, then not having Rudy, then Rudy coming back for game three might have thrown him off a little bit as well. And they will have seen things that can then be adjusted to that Denver were doing in order to secure the win. But Scott, what's the key here then for the Minnesota Timberwolves to win this one at home?
They got to get back to doing what they did in Denver. And that's allowing their defense to dictate terms of the game. Continue pressuring Jamal Murray like they do, extending their defense up the floor, being physical with them on the interior, keep throwing different bodies at Nikola Jokic, hoping to throw him off balance a little bit. And then offensively, they've got to be much more sharp than they were in the last game and attacking the rim and putting pressure on Denver's defense at the other end. So, that's what I expect for Minnesota. And they've got to do it from the start. What they don't want to do is come out. Whoever's going to win that opening volley in that first quarter and who's going to set the tone for how this game is going to be played, I think will go a long way in terms of determining who's going to be the victor. And Minnesota has done that in two of the three games. I can't imagine them not being able to do that at home in this pivotal game four for this series, because if they go back to Denver 2-2, it's an entirely new ball game now. Now you're playing the world champs best of three, two of those games being in Denver. And I'm hard pressed to see if Denver goes back 2-2 to see them losing another game at home. Three. Yes,
the game they won, though, in Minnesota, Jamal Murray got working early. Usually he waits till like the fourth quarter or the second half at least to get going. Yes. PJ, as a guard in this league, if he's being pressured by, you know, Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, what can he do to kind of overcome some of that? And what's the key for Jamal Murray to get a hot start going into this game? Because without him operating how he usually does, this team has really struggled.
Well, you can see the spacing in game three for the Denver Nuggets was much better. So there's ways of alleviate of really dealing with the pressure that you saw in the first two games of this series. So I'm not concerned. Jamal Murray is an all-star caliber player. Okay. A little pressure, you may disrupt him for a game, but I don't expect him. He's too good of a player to not be able to make an adjustment. So these guys are really, really good, and they're going to adjust. And let's not forget, they are the defending champions. So, as I told you, Mo, and Scott knows this, when you're playing against an MVP caliber player, that player is capable of winning a game or two all by himself. Okay. So I'm expecting, like I said, that's why I'm saying with the Minnesota Timberwolves, even though they have played better in the series thus far, you can't forget Jokic right now is currently the best player. Okay. It's going to take a superhuman effort to knock them out and to knock him out. He's too good of a player. So I think Minnesota is capable? Absolutely. They've shown you now. Now they're in a fight. Okay. They came out in one game one, then they came out in one game two, but now you got to finish the deal. And Jokic is not going away quietly. This team has a lot of fight, they have a lot of pride. And I think it's going to be a phenomenal game. I really do. Now, I don't know if this moment is too big for the Timberwolves. And this is a big moment for them, okay, in a lot of regards, because now we are saying, oh, wow, they can beat them. And they've shown that they can beat them. But Minnesota is not going to go away quietly. So I will be glued into this game, okay? And you want to see a great effort. But I can assure you, Jokic and Murray will show up, and we're going to see who's going to show up on behalf of the Timberwolves because they're going to need it.
We're going to learn if the Minnesota Timberwolves are ready to take that next step.
Thank you, Coach.
Yeah, that next step. You know, they've taken the step, obviously, this playoffs thus far, winning the first round, going to Denver, winning the first two. Now, this step here is showing, okay, we're ready to go to the championship or not. We're gonna see.
And I don't know.
And like I said, they've got to answer the question. None of us know the answer to that question yet, right now.
Would you agree with me saying whoever wins this particular series is winning the whole thing, the NBA championship?
I believe Minnesota, you know, forgetting game three, going into game three of this past series, were playing the best in the playoffs on
Yeah,
either
they were
side.
undefeated up until game three.
Yeah, they were playing the best. And I could very well see the winner of this being able to win the whole thing. But I don't want to discount what's going on over in Dallas and OKC right now. If you want me to favor somebody, yes, I believe the winner of this series would be my favorite to win it all, just because of the level of consistency that both teams have shown. That's the one thing that Boston, as good as Boston has been, and I know they were quote unquote consistent during the season, we've seen them have a game in each series thus far where they just, for whatever the reason, don't show up, hit a total lull. I don't know if they do that against one of these two teams, it could be more damaging than it was against Miami or Cleveland. So I would
BJ,
favor.
do you think the winner of the Timberwolves, the Nuggets, is going to win the entire NBA championship this season?
Well, I'm not ready to crown anyone. I think the favorites, because we know there are different levels to this. It's one thing I can say about the Denver Nuggets. I know they are capable of playing at a championship caliber level. There are too many unanswered questions right now from the other teams. Now, if you want to say which looks to be the best or the most dominant team thus far, Minnesota in game two had everyone on alert. If you want to say you want to send out a message, well, if you're just saying one game, you know, they swept the previous series, they come out, win the first two games, everyone, now you have my attention now. However, I do know that there will be moments like we're going to see here in game four. I know Jokic can dominate that game. And I don't know what Minnesota's going to do.
Right.
Okay. And that's it. So I got to go what I know. If you're saying who's going to win a must game where every possession matters on the road in a hostile environment, hey, I know Jokic and Murray, they're battle tested. They've done it. I'm not going to, until someone else shows me that they can do that, and I can't predict that, I got to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And listen, they lost the first two games at home and had the presence to bounce back and win convincingly in game three. So that shows you everything you need to know. Okay.
Oh,
all right. I'm not ready to say anything. Now, Minnesota, this Dallas team, Kyrie has been there. Kyrie has been superb. His leadership has been incredible in what they're doing. Big win today. I'm sure OKC felt that they have an opportunity to win that game today. And listen, they could very well win game four. So, and your Celtics, Mo, and your Celtics. What do we say, Mo? Scott said it here. Everyone knows it. They're going to have a game where Mo was going to go crazy. They just do that for you, Mo. Mo, you know what the Celtics are, Mo? This is what it's like raising teenagers. They're going to do something. The Celtics are this is your teenage child right here, Bo. They're going to do something every series, but they always come back. So they've been consistent. They're going to do it. They'll probably win big next game, and then they'll move on. But playing against Jokic, I know that may not be good enough.
That's not the formula you want against Jokic.
You can't have those games or whatever where they just I'm not ready to say that though, Mo. There's a lot of parity still, but you know, Minnesota caught, I think, everyone's attention. I mean, they were really, those first two games, they were really, really good.
I see Minnesota as the one team, even before the series started, that was capable from a physical standpoint of matching up well against the Denver Nuggets, as well as any team over in the West, because of the size and the different different guys that they could put on Jokic and then how they defended and on the perimeter. You look, because you know Anthony Edwards can guard Jamal Murray, but you can put Jaden McDaniels on him. Nikhil Alexander Walker. There's different people that you can move around. They're very versatile defensively. And they were the number one ranked defensive team in the league for a reason this year. And they've shown it thus far in the playoffs with the exception of the last game. Denver figured some things out and showed what a heart of a champion he is. Denver was not going to just fade away lightly. So I wasn't surprised that Denver won the game. I was a little surprised maybe at the margin, but I wasn't surprised at the game.
You know, like you say, in terms of the way the team is built, Tim Connelly, who built the Denver Nuggets, went and built this Minnesota Timberwolves team. But if you also look at the coaching staffs, Chris Finch was an assistant under Mike Malone. And now Chris Finch is sidelined with an injury. Mike Anori was also an assistant to Mike Malone. So there's like matchups within the matchups, even down towards the coaching staff in terms of this Timberwolves team being built to take apart the Denver Nuggets, who are the reigning champions. But we're going to have to see how it goes. And we'll be back with more on tomorrow's episode. Make sure you guys subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. Anything else, fellas?
Well, we're going to see tomorrow if Andrew Nembhard can shoot another one from the parking lot. He won the game in the parking lot. And I didn't get a chance.
BJ, Scott's texting him before the game with some tips on how to shoot those.
That was unbelievable.
I mean,
Shot that one from way out, didn't he?
And it wasn't like he was hot. It wasn't like
exactly.
I got to give that kid credit for taking that shot, and that was a big time shot.
Yep. I'm looking forward to it. Those of you in the UK, you can catch me breaking it down on TV. I'm on BBC Three, BBC iPlayer. Yeah. We'll be covering the Knicks and the Pacers, and then back to my hotel to do Denver, Minnesota, and then back to the podcast. So I'll do that. BJ, enjoy your travels. Scott, safe travels to you tomorrow as well.
Yes.
And I'll see you guys very soon for another episode of the Hoop Genius podcast.
How come you won't be joining us here in the States? I mean,
yeah.
We'll all be in the same city. What's going on?
Yeah, like, we could have done a live show.
I get the invitation.
All 30 teams are going to be here, and there's only one person missing. No, like, what's going on here?
You need to tell Mr. Adam Silver to send me a plane ticket in the post. You know what I'm saying? Okay. This is the cost of living crisis we in. You know what I mean? I ain't gonna be paying for these flights. You know what I'm saying? I need Uncle Adam to send me the jet. They know where I'm at. If they want me there, they just need to make the call. I'm available. You know what I mean? Could have done a live show. Could have spoke to some of the draft prospects over there in Chicago.
What is going on? Like, everyone's here except Mo. What is happening here?
Well, the TV studio is in Manchester, so if there's any flights from Manchester to America tomorrow evening, feel free to put me on one of them, and we'll be there, and we'll get it done. You know what I mean? I'll pack my suitcase with the cameras and the mics, and we'll make it happen. But if not, then we're going to have to maybe get the NBA Finals. Maybe we'll do something for the NBA Finals, maybe Summer League. You never know. I'm going to stay working on it. But until next time, you guys enjoy. I'll be here watching from a distance, and you guys will be tuning in for more of the Hoop Genius podcast. Get buckets.